On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
And it took you a while to get to the number one job at the Herald Sun.
A few fell off the perch.
I don't understand that.
Racing New South Wales or the ATC can just move a stakes race.
So the media is just as much to blame trying to sensationalise issues.
Racing ministers come and racing ministers go, though.
They don't drink, they don't smoke. It's not like 20 years ago when they pulled them out of an orphanage or jail.
You know, it's like motor racing or mountaineering.
I mean, I know I'm being devil's advocate.
Of course you are.
He said he had a brain fade, he was buggered. It's that time of the week. It is time for The Verdict. Great to have Jake Norton back in the studio. How are you, Jake?
I am absolutely wonderful.
You're looking
nugget.
Fit and refreshed.
I feel great. I haven't spent a great deal of time in Melbourne lately, but my good mate Phil married his sweetheart Dee in Bali a week ago, so I spent a bit of time over there. And then over the weekend, I mean, all eyes will have been on the US Open over in Wisconsin, but there was a greater golf tournament on the Trevino. This year it was held in Adelaide.
The Lee Trevino.
We played the Grange and then played Royal Adelaide with a rest day in between spent at McLaren Vale. So we have a new Trevino champion.
Is it you?
The name M. McGrath goes onto the trophy. Not me, unfortunately. I finished second. But great to be back in town and great to be here with you.
You've got a great lifestyle.
That's what I was thinking. He leads a life, doesn't he?
Have you felt any squeeze from the missus? Because there's no ring
very
on it.
Very much so.
There's no ring on it.
I'm a very strong-willed man, Michael.
Really? Well, there's not much of an answer there, just a shy laugh. Hey, guess who's back? Maddie Stewart, welcome
morning,
back.
Morning, gents. Jake's been living the high life and I've been living in a third world country for 2 weeks.
You've been in Cambodia, how was
it? Right at home. Oh, great, amazing. Yeah, recommend to anyone. Yeah, just go there.
You found your cost of living world?
I met my level of living. Yeah, no, it was fantastic. Fantastic.
And how are you, Mickey? How are things?
Were you able to get much reception over there to watch the races?
I remember one night I was Schindler's at a French restaurant in Phnom Penh with a betting account open and listening to this radio station calling races from Vaal and places like that. And I woke up the next morning and realised I'd done about 500 in the middle of the night in Phnom Penh betting on Vaal.
It's about 3 weeks
and
in Cambodia.
Lingfield. Yeah, no, that could have kept me going
it's
for eight months.
Yeah. Oh, well, good to have you back. Richo has done a great job filling the void. We're going to keep using Richo over the coming weeks, which is great to have here. But, gents, there's never a dull moment in racing. It's just a dreary old, or it was meant to be a dreary old winter's day, but so much to come out of Moonee Valley on the weekend. The highlight, like the Stockdales, that was just a magic moment for the family. You were front and centre. What did you make of it, Matty?
Yeah, well, I've had a sort of an interested investment in the Stockdale story. I remember going down there when Frankie was at Sale and he'd just done some time, a really dark period of his life. And little Brandon was this tiny little kid then. And I remember remembering him as he came when he was inducted into the apprentices school at Racing Victoria. This is the little kid who didn't have his dad for so long in his life. And it's just so I've been, you know, obviously generated an interest with me in the story. And I've got a really good respect for Frankie as just a resilient character and a very good trainer. And Brandon, have you ever shaken Brandon's hand?
No, I haven't.
It's like a clamp. They're just tough people, these Stockdales. And so they're a resilient family. And I just think it was just a lovely moment, given the background and all that sort of stuff, that they were able to come together. And even though I was on the runner-up with Mellum on it at 16-1, the Tommy Hughes, but I cheered Frankie home anyway.
It's just a reminder of, you know, why we love racing, for all the powerhouse stables and, you know, breeding operations and so forth. When you see stories like this transpire, and racing throws up those sort of opportunities a lot of other sports can't or don't, it's just wonderful. So well done to the Stockdales. A great moment for them.
And he's almost a sign of the future as well, because I was down at Pakenham Training Centre with a couple of mates actually for a night meeting a few weeks, 6 months or so ago, and you look at the lots for the stables. You know when they open up a housing estate and they've got all the everything, the roads and the plumbing set up, but there's no actual houses there and all these pipes sticking out of the ground. So Frankie was the first trainer on course down at the new track at Pakenham. So there's a couple of others as well. It's a probably pretty lonely, windswept environment for him at the moment. But he's, you know, when you look back in 10 years' time and say, where did this all begin? It began with Frankie Stockdale's stables, basically. So, yeah.
Well, that was one of the highlights of the day. We're going to talk about Bo Mertens in a moment. But overall, I know there was a lot of Twitter chat about how the track played. It seemed leaderish early. And then, as we normally see, a bit of an overcorrection. They go hard and you start to get some swooping out wide. What did you make of the track, gents? And we're going to speak to a jockey, but we haven't been able to get one on. But there was a lot of talk about the kickback because of the aerovation. It did look like there was a lot of kickback.
Yeah, look, I think the fact that there are quite a few rough results that took place, and when that occurs, it gives punters a sense that they've got it wrong, and you sort of, you know, start looking for reasons why. But you had Pure Emotion winning at 16. You had Stylish Miss 31. There was
half-tipped Black Tomahawk by DK.
I heard that on Saturday morning. Petrology 25 gave it a good push.
So I think that when there are rough results, it compounds any perceived bias, whether it's real or, and I shouldn't say bias, but pattern, whether it's perceived or not. When those results take place, I think it compounds things for punters. It sort of sends the angry mob into a bit of a frenzy.
Well, it makes a difficult day. I mean, everyone knows, but I reckon it's evened out a bit. It's amazing what a difference a couple of metres can make, because when the rail was true a couple of weeks ago, when ability became the greatest moral of all time, the way the track was racing, and you knew that getting in a running line out wide and coming out wide and arcing around the turn and flashing home, you push the rail out 3 metres, and that becomes something that was an escalator, becomes mission impossible the next time you go to the same track with the rail pushed out. So that was that was the change from true to 3 metres, and that's, you know what's going to happen, but it's still, you still marvel at the fact that it can be such an extreme change for what seems to be a minor alteration.
It's tough for punters.
Well, then what happens is the inside gets worn out, the tempo changes because everyone wants to be up on the speed, and then you get the horses coming out wide and winning late in the day. So it actually does a flipperoo on you. So, but we all know that.
It's going to be interesting because that's the last meeting for, I think, 10 weeks. They'll get the track prepared and ready to go for spring, and they hadn't had, I think they'd only had one other meeting in the past 10 weeks as well. So there's not been much racing at Moonee Valley. So it'll give them time to refurb the track and bring it back as it needs to be in A1 condition for the spring.
Yeah, look, I really like betting at Moonee Valley. It's one of my favourite tracks to bet at. I will always defend track managers. I know how difficult a job it is, you know, working closely with the guys at Caulfield Sandown and Mornington, as I do. You know, racetracks are living, breathing things. I think Marty Synan does a fantastic job at Moonee Valley. And like I said, I really like betting there.
Yeah. This isn't a pot on track, man. This is just a sort of an observation of the quirks of tracks in general, isn't it? Nothing to do with those who prepare them, but just the...
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Tracks have quirks.
Yeah. And how Moonee Valley, with the geography of it, if you fiddle with the rail a bit, it can actually flip things on its head. But you know that going in. The only thing was, it used to be True and 7 had the extreme, or True and 6 or 5 had the extreme. 3... was very much like a 7, wasn't it? Like the rail placement on Saturday. So,
but a little bit of obsequious behaviour here from myself. Revolving Door and the other winner for Clinton McDonald, Pure Emotion. Dom Romanelli, the treasurer of the Melbourne Racing Club, and Brodie Arnhold, the CEO, co-owners of those two horses.
The rich get richer.
Bravo, fellas. Well done.
Brodie pins the shoulders back too. So,
well, Clinton McDonald, that's a big day for Clinton, because he's been quiet recently, and Clinton came on Friday, and he actually said that Pure Emotion was his best. $16 win. So we love trainers coming on here and tipping their horses. And it was a big day for the stable.
It was. And you know what? Every trainer bar Weir and Hayes is going quiet. That's what we're dealing with now. And you're right about trainer interviews. And it's not just because we do them. But I saw some, you know, you get those smart-assy comments on social media. Well, I never listen to them because I reckon...
Well, more fool them.
Yeah, exactly. Because I reckon, even for punters who determine what they do on the mathematics of the punt and that aren't influenced by, you know, verbal opinions and things like that. You're crazy if you don't. The trainers train them. They know them every day. Then the more you interview them, the more the listeners get an idea of the trainer as well, and when they're confident and when they're not. I find it bizarre, people who don't think there's value in hearing what trainers
have to
say.
Well, I know there was a bit of pushback because of what Scott Brunton said about Lord Da Vinci, but I mean...
Dave Brunton.
Dave Brunton. We have a bit of a joke with Dave and Scott because they are so astute and they don't mind a bet. But they've just been honest. And if that horse had got beaten and you find out subsequent to the race that it hadn't travelled as well as what they had hoped for, all hell would have broken
loose. Well, I remember, and we brought this up the other day, Peter Hayes did it once. So he said, oh, God, there's a million reasons why this thing can't win today. This, 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 and this. It was 4-6 out to 7-2 and won by 7.5 at Sandown. But the thing is, for every one that steers you slightly in the wrong direction unintentionally, there's 99 that don't. So you just got to, it's rubber the green stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the trainers have been, they're so upfront and analytical now that they're happy to tell you when a horse got no hope as well, which we see Mick Price leading the way there and Darren Weir and the like. So I think they are invaluable. Speaking of punters' pals, or the opposite, Petrology getting up. And we had two of the Saturday morning panel, Tip Petrology.
Joel and Carl, I think, from memory.
It was remarkable.
$26.
Yeah. He goes in, whenever I have a quaddie and he's going around, he goes in every time because he's just has that capability. He starts 25-1 more often than he doesn't, but he pulls those flukish wins out time and again. Just on pure emotion, I'd just also like to congratulate Daniel Stackhouse. Great to see him ride a city winner on a Saturday, having seen the amount of work he puts in on the training tracks. Great to see him, very talented horseman, ride a winner.
Well, he was probably one of the unintended victims of Moody walking away, was all the guys and girls that were part of that operation, even in a smaller way, like Stackhouse and Linda Meach and that. They were put on their backsides a bit too, weren't they, by losing their big cash cow?
So. Yeah, particularly Stacky. I think, Linda's had pretty good opportunities with Kieran Maher, but you're right. Yeah. Certainly was a kick for those guys, but great to see him back in the winner's circle.
Interesting again, Dan Stackhouse, congratulations, well done, but he got fined for hitting the horse three times more than allowed prior to the 100 and two consecutive, so I think he copped a $750 and $250 fine, so it just bubbles along that these winners, with breaking the whip rules, but they continue to win. There's no recourse for punters or connections of those who get beaten. What your SMS is quickly, because we're about to talk about what was the biggest point at Moonee Valley, and that was the Beau Mertens ride. SMS us on 0416 90 50 52. Now, Maddie, we had hoped to get Mick Kent, Beau's master, on, but he has decided he doesn't want to come on air and speak, but you've had a good chat to him off air. Beau Mertens has been crucified on social media, and to the eye, you probably think that's fair enough because it wasn't a very good ride.
Well, and look, basically, I think the issue was that Mick's a great trainer and a great master of apprentices and all that sort of stuff, but he would be a very tricky trainer to ride for. And I think basically the plan was, because Mick's a rampant track walker. And there's a lane. It'll be okay. We'll go out three wide and then come in because that's a better ground. So he can probably load up a young kid with a lot of instruction. You know what I mean? So, but I think the plan was to don't come out wide down the back where it was relatively quicksand. But when you turn for home, when you get in the straight, albeit a very small straight, you've got an option probably to come out then. And he chose to sort of stay in as per what his impression of the instructions was to stay in and all that sort of stuff. So look, to me, this is an issue of that fine line between a young kid, this is his master too, so okay, well, I'm very accustomed to listening to what this guy says and these instructions, and fair enough too, and he knows the horse. It was his first ride on the horse. So he's thinking, well, I've got a ride to instruction. It's like most jockeys, but it's that fine line between at what point do you use your own initiative and for how long do you get burdened down by what you've been instructed to do. And I think it's just one of those tricky things with young jockey relationships with trainers where at what point do I use my own autonomy and at what point do I stick to instruction?
Did Mick think it was a bad ride? You've spoken to him off air.
Probably only that he overstuck to a perceived instruction in the straight, I would say.
And anecdotally, Mick Kent and probably Darren Weir over the last 3 or 4 years with Peter Ellis as track walker, the amount of winners that they have late in programs because those guys walk tracks throughout meetings time and again, you have to put faith in those instructions.
The thing that can happen, Jake, has happened to Jake. They can say, well, the best ground's to the inside, so try and stick to the inside. But what the instructions don't say is, and then if you run into a wall of horses, then you're on your own.
Sure. But I think Beau did the right thing. He came out, in the inquiry and said, I stuffed it up. Full credit to him for that.
100%.
And as to whether the ride deserved any type of more severe repercussions than that, I highly doubt. I think Beau sort of said the right thing and move on. Everyone's entitled to get one wrong. It's racing.
You know the lesson, and that's a lesson in all relationships, Michael, and you might have a moment in yours where you have cause to pull...
You're talking about my master?
...the ace out of the pack, and that is the unblinking look in the eye and say, nobody feels as bad about it as I do.
Sounds like you've used that a few times.
You can only use it once every 5 years because they remember. They remember.
Sorry, can you say that again, Matty?
Nobody feels as bad about it as I do.
Well, perfect. Just to follow up what you said, Pat Bailey's written in The Age today that he declared to the steward that he slaughtered in the inquiry. And Terry Bailey said, "We rarely hear admissions like that from any jockey, but your frankness should be respected." 100%. Jockeys aren't robots. They get things wrong. Like a footballer has a bad game. We have a bad day on air. Probably more often than not.
It's far easier watching from the grandstand or the lounge room as well.
You've got to own
a saddle.
One thing, though, that I did raise my eye at in the steward's report, and the steward's report...
Eyebrow or eye?
Eyebrow.
Because it sounded a bit ghoulish.
I don't have a glass eye. Was that the stewards said it was a gross error of judgment. However, we're not comfortably satisfied. Such an error was culpable under the rules given the inexperience, or his inexperience as a claiming apprentice. Mm. He is leading the jockeys premiership. Mm. So I don't know about that inexperience
you
part.
The claim is the thing with kids as well as their talent, but, you know, the inexperience factor will still come out even though he is leading the premiership. And look, I just think it's an interesting example of the conflict that goes on between instruction, experience, and doing the right thing by the punters and all these things happening at 60 k's an hour in real time. So I think a sympathetic steward, especially if you do the nobody feels as bad about it as I do line, you've got to be soft on them.
Yeah, look, I saw some of that discussion on social media as well. And the most talented people in any sport, some of them are 18 and 19. You know, and the AFL is a good example of that. But young performers are still inclined to make mistakes. And yes, he's been a very successful jockey this year and is clearly a star in the making, if not already. But he's still inexperienced and entitled to make those mistakes and learn from them.
And it's the punt. There were 9 races at the Valley. You've probably lost on most of them and for different reasons. And
heavily backed favourite.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just the role. If you want to punt more often than you should, and you're going to tweet more angrily than you should, and all that sort of stuff, then it's look yourself in the mirror.
I don't think you should have got time. I think punters should be allowed to voice their thoughts and their opinions, but
sure,
you've just got to do it in the right way, obviously.
That's exactly right.
Couch them properly. Outside of Moonee Valley, before we move on to other issues, anything else from the day that caught your eye, gents?
Well, the Barney up at Ipswich. There's a Barney on the lawn up there, and my concern with a lot of these, particularly the standalones, is you've got to control the environment so the party doesn't take over from the attraction of the general race goer going.
And so just explain what happened.
Apparently there was a punch on it on the lawn at Ipswich, you know, and apparently the jockeys were saying that the boom boom music was just going incessantly through the day. You know, this is where there's animals and, you know, racing and horses and concentration and things like that. So I just talking to a couple of colleagues up in Brisbane, the worry is that the Ipswich Cup meeting has drifted too far into the party boom boom music scene and not enough as a rollicking big race meeting. And I think maybe there's a lesson there for a few clubs and a few race meetings where there's a fine line between turning it into something that it isn't, as in a rave party, and maintaining the fact that it's still a race meeting.
Yeah, there is a fine balance in trying to attract new people to an event and the racing being the highlight of that event. But also race goers attending with no interest in the racing whatsoever and just for the party.
Yeah.
It is a challenge for racing clubs, and certainly disappointing to hear that a punch on is ensued at the races at Ipswich.
Well, it used to be the signature of the Geelong Cup meeting, wasn't it? There'd always be a punch on, because it was at the 2-day meeting then, I think, and by the end of the second day, it was just on for young
and
old.
There had been issues at one of the Brisbane meetings earlier in the carnival with loud noise. One of the jockeys going out onto the track said, "This marquee's got to turn its music down." So I suppose it is a balance of getting young people to the track and get them to have an entertaining atmosphere, not just for the horses, and also, though, what is the core product?
They did. Like, Flemington capped its crowds because the party was taking over from the races. Yeah. And since they brought the crowds down, for a long time there, they saw an ever-increasing spike in crowds as a sign of success. And they discovered that that wasn't the ultimate sign of success. It was having a good day was a sign of success. So they reined it in sensibly. And you guys, I mean, the Chinese theme at Moonee Valley Night Meeting is a good one. And you guys have got the music after the last, and you've probably learned over the last 5 or 6 years where the balance sits. You know,
yeah, so the uniqueness of racing as an event that people often dismiss or forget about, I suppose, is that the day goes for 5 or 6 hours. You've got action for 90 seconds and then you've got 35, 40 minutes of dead air, so to speak. So, I mean, young people going to those events, even if they are captivated by the races, they've got half an hour in between to have a drink. Mm.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's dead air between, because I think...
Well, not dead air. That's the right way of putting it. You're right. That was poor terminology, but you know what I mean. Like, in between the correct weight and the horses entering the yard again, there is... some time to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Unlike a footy game where it's constant. Yeah.
Exactly. Got an SMS. Yeah. Ipswich is Bougainville. That's a little bit harsh. I've never been to Ipswich. But what about the win of Sell Sense in the Cup? Now, Mick Sharkey was on Friday Form Focus. He tipped it at $10. Started at $3.40 and won like Farlow.
Yeah, Walker and I think Joel or Carl were on it as well on Saturday morning. So it tells me that it was originally over the odds and they found it at the odds and it won well. Self-Sense. I mean, we know his limitations. It speaks more of the Ipswich Cup than it does about Self-Sense.
Of the field and the four. Got a few SMSs coming through. Boys, they all make mistakes, even the best of them. That's from Bob talking about Bo Mertens. Give Bo a break. Roy Higgins dropped his hands and missed a place as a 38-year-old. That's from Razza. Another SMS coming through here. How good was Darren Potter's call of how the track would play? He said it would be a leader's track. Sammy Honan said it would play largely even. So these track walkers, they do. And Darren Potter is one of the best of them going around, along with Pete Ellis as well. So they play.
Is Darren Potter the one that got booted from Werribee? Remember that?
I think so.
Yeah, he might have been disallowed to entry onto the course proper that day, I think.
There's another SMS here. There's some disquiet over Weary's dominance after two winners at 30s and 25s with poor form at the Valley. Hayes's Petrology was 25-1 but had place form in earlier starts. Punters at 6s and 7s as to what to back when a trainer hogs the space. Not good for racing. That's from Kevin at Drysdale.
I pretty much agree with that, but there's nothing you can do to stop it.
You can't. Mm. You can't cap their runners.
And they're lining up in different...
Their success is not good for the overall divvying up of the pie. I would say that, but you can't do anything about it. And
what? Why?
Because others, for the obvious reason that they take more than the others. Like in the old days, the pie was divvied up much. But we're talking about very successful trainers before who have having very, very, very lean patches.
Yeah. So you prefer a sort of communist model?
No, I don't, but I just think the byproduct of two super, super dominant stables, this is the thing we had in Sydney a few years ago, can be that that others get squeezed out, whereas previously they hadn't.
So I guess you'd advocate then like the Hong Kong model where you have trainers are allowed to train X amount of horses, or I think Japan's...
No, I'm just saying that the cycle occurs at times where you get super dominance from a couple and others suffer. You can't do anything about it. It kind of corrects itself over time, and I just think we're in a particular era where it's very tough for some that traditionally had a firmer hold.
Yeah. I mean, I'd take my hat off to Darren Weir being able to manage that, just that sheer amount of horses. Hundreds and hundreds of horses on his books.
Yeah.
Shows that he's got such good staff at his various training venues.
Eventually, market forces will cap him. You know what I mean? So
naturally.
Yeah. I'm not saying you can introduce measures to stop it. I'm just saying that the byproduct of it is that it can be a distorted divvying up of the pie.
Yeah.
Got an interesting tweet from Richo. Is listening. Jason Richardson's tweeted in, read the Moonee Valley track. He says, an idea for Best Bets Racing. Can we change the notification, the form guide for Moonee Valley to reflect the different track due to the rail placement, i.e. Moonee Valley track in the true, Moonee Valley 1, 3, 5, 7. If we're getting into more forensic form and punting knowledge, that's not a bad idea.
Well, from the Melbourne Racing Club's perspective, we've been aggregating some data over the last 12 months or so in conjunction with our track managers as to how certain results have eventuated with the rail in certain positions and the track in certain conditions. So hopefully within the new season, we'll have some pretty clear...
Have you found patterns and so forth?
We're still... I'd like to get a full season at least of data before we start publishing it and really understanding it. So we're still just collecting it at the moment. But ahead of the spring, hopefully we'll have that type of information available to punters through our social media channels.
Well,
and so forth.
That's brilliant because the pro punters do that.
It's a matter of how open accurate for everyone. That interpretation is, though, because it was interesting because on Saturday, because I was trying to rack my mind about rail placements at the Valley and how they actually played as opposed to how we think they played. And I Googled... and RaceNet has a complete log of, say, going back the last 30 Moonee Valley meetings.
Yep.
And for about 28 of them, or 26 of them, they said track played fair. And I would say that for probably 20 of the 30, the track had a pattern. So their assessment, I would say, is inaccurate of how the track played.
I'm not talking about making assessments or judgments based on the data. Just saying, here's the data.
Yep.
The last on the rail was in this position with similar conditions. you know, four winners came from the first three in the run, two leaders won, and just paint a picture that way and allow punters to use that information for themselves. They can interpret it how they want.
Yeah, but that picture has to be split between how the day plays out. Because as we saw at Moonee Valley on Saturday, screaming leaders track early, it overcorrects, they chop out, and then they come. They start to change later in the day. So the overall figure might say, well, half the races were run by swoopers, and or 35% won by swoopers, and 65% won by on pace.
So if the data can reflect first four or five races, you're looking for paces.
But if you look at it overall, you'll say, well, there wasn't much because a few swoopers won, a few leaders won. But that's not the way it actually was.
That's good feedback.
And that's Profits.com tweeted in and said the track walked exactly the way it played. Inside held up first 5 to 6, and then the outside was the way home late. That info was around on Twitter. Profits.com, you had a very long Twitter debate with Profits.com last night on another issue about the amount of Group 1 races in Australian racing. We've got 72 Group 1s in Australia. You were quite staunch in the fact that we don't have too many Group 1s.
My point is more that scrapping Group 1s, how does that benefit the industry?
Because if those Group 1s have false status, you've got to make it real. But if we've got too many, which we do, because hacks win Group 1s in this country, and they shouldn't, right?
Okay, so you probably say that maybe handicaps shouldn't be Group 1s then.
No, because we have a unique model of handicaps where they've evolved in a very high-quality sort of way with a limited handicap
but
spread.
But you surely have to understand that the grading of races is determined by a methodical...
If that's how it's done globally, well, why are we so disproportionate to the rest of the world?
Well, we're part of the Asian Patent Committee, and...
So how many Group 1s are in Japan?
I'm not sure, but we probably have a lot more racing than Japan per capita. Mm. So,
more racing doesn't mean the top tier of it is...
But it's all relative, I suppose. I don't know. Look, I see that point, and relative to other countries, we do have a lot of Group 1s.
Well, Geddon's just tweeted, Australia has double England, 36, and France is 27. So it's a huge discrepancy.
Well, what's the horse population of each? How many races are run in each country? I'm not quite sure, but I'd prefer to have that information before I make a judgment. But my point is simply that how is wholesale scrapping of Group 1s of any benefit to our industry?
It is if it's determined that the Group 1s have unwarranted status. You can't just allow them to proliferate just because they're there.
I'm not saying they should proliferate, but why scrap heaps of them just for the sake of it?
No, the sake of it would be that they have proven that they don't earn the status.
But how does that benefit the industry, Matty?
Well, it doesn't benefit one particular part of the industry who pretty much runs the industry.
I agree with that.
No, but the measure of performance and class is the status of the race. And if the horses winning those races aren't... If the status is inaccurate, then you do rein it in.
The status is accurate and determined by the ratings of the horses finishing the first four.
Yeah, but I've seen a lot of hacks win hack Group 1 races in Australia.
You're going to get that. Mm. You're going to get lesser horses.
It's more the three-year-old fillies races or things like that.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. And you don't want to throw anything under the bus, but, you know, your South Australian derbies and those type races.
Yeah, well, perhaps the way that ratings are evaluated, because they're different benchmarks for three-year-old races, fillies and mares races, as opposed to open races. So maybe that needs to be addressed, sure.
But if you're trying to keep it globally relevant, you know, we've got so many Group 1 races, knowing that the depth of our horse population is not what it is in other countries, where, say, you've got a horse that will go around 6-4 in a South... Say, Weary's Thing that won the South Australian Derby, on the one that Howard Be Thy Name... I'm assuming that it's still got Group 1 status. That horse, if you take it to Epsom Downs for the English Derby, would collapse at the 600 and go around at 500-1. So you've got to have some sensible measure of quality of animal if you're attributing a Group 1.
Yeah, but by the same token, there's been horses who've run placings in the Epsom Derby and come out here and failed.
Yeah, well, that's probably more of an adaptation issue than... Anyway, look, I think we'll... But one thing that I will say, and this comes into this whole idea of the rejigging of the Sydney Carnival...
Yes.
Is one thing that I find really cheeky is I know you can create a race and then give it status because, say, if you create the Dubai World Cup and give it $10 million, you're going to attract a Group 1 status pretty quickly, aren't you? But how they think that they can fiddle around with the dates of a Craven and races like that and hope to achieve Group 1 status by a prize money elevation without any justification of the race's performance... That's what I find cheeky. You have to earn your stripes to get Group 1 in my book, But what they're doing with these this shuffling around the Sydney Carnival is saying, well, we're going to change the date and throw an extra 500 grand at it, so give us Group 1 status.
Well, if you read Ray Thomas's article in the Herald Sun this morning, it seems like there is going to be a huge change to the Sydney Spring Carnival so it can benefit the Everest Day. The Golden Rose, are the lead-ups, the shorts, or I can't remember the other races, but how much of an effect is that going to have for the preparations of horses and those who may come down to race at your carnival, Jake, and the Spring Carnival?
Yeah, what's probably been most disappointing has been the openness that this is a sheer attempt at cannibalising the Victorian Carnival. And we had Peter Volandis on this show, I don't know, 2 months ago, and he basically said he gave the KFC versus McDonald's example. As for your point, Matty, you can't just throw money in a race and see it upgraded. It has to perform to a certain level over a number of years. But I understand that Racing New South Wales is trying to do a bit of horse trading with other races, saying, look, you can downgrade this race, which they did.
So is there hope or their intention with the Craven that it will... What group status do they expect this elevated race now to have?
Well, I don't think it can be elevated. I think it's a Group 3 currently.
Right.
It can't just go to a Group 1 because they apply for it, unless it has reached a benchmark on previous performance.
I know you've got to take a break, Mickey, but I reckon this is... I'd love to get further into this because let's take a short break
and then on the other side we'll continue to discuss this. We also want to talk about the pig gate, which has gripped the harness world up north as well. And we want all of your feedback. SMS us on 0416 90 50 52 or tweet us here at Racing Pulse. So we'll be back in a moment.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. We're currently discussing the amount of Group 1 races that we have in Australia. We've got 72 in Australia. Now, I asked before how many races are in Japan. Hats Aiken has tweeted over from Hong Kong. He says Japan has 24 Group 1s, but they run a smaller proportion of races compared to the amount of races we have in Australia. But I suppose... at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many lower class races we have, the standard of Group 1 gallopers that we have.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I don't disagree with any of that. Again, I just don't see any benefit in wholesale. If we halve the amount of Group 1s we have, just doing it for the sake of it,
it for the sake of accuracy, of the value of the Group 1s. That's the whole point.
But they're determined by a science already, Matty.
I know, but the science is obviously wrong because we're having this continual debate about the fact that we've got too many Group 1 races and that we're having hacks winning them.
And the movement of the New South Wales Carnival that's coming up and what they want to do, what intrigues me or confuses me is that reading Ray Thomas's article today, it's a fait accompli, that it's just rubber stamped and Racing New South Wales seems to be able to do whatever they would like to do. What you work in racing administration, Jake, what are the barriers or what needs to be done to actually, if you wanted to change everything at the MRC, what would stop you doing that?
There are certain conditions whereby if you're moving a race, say, within a week or within 2 weeks, I think it is, that you basically don't have to apply for any... approval from
because that would be seen
Australia
as just minor tinkering, not a dramatic structural change
exactly
to a carnival.
So that's what I understand that Racing New South Wales is doing with its carnival.
What if that 2 week period is a crucial overlap period between the end of the Sydney Carnival and the start of the blockbuster Melbourne Carnival? That's what's happened here.
Yeah,
and that's why it's different because this changing of from the Epsom Day to Everest Day of this ridiculous Craven Stakes, which is now running at a collision course with the Caulfield Stakes, I think it is,
yes,
or one of those big weight for age races you guys have,
yep,
that is not just a little tinkering thing for the sake of a Sydney change. That is a complete invasion of a transitional period from Sydney to Melbourne. And that's why they, you know, to my mind, there's a very big gap between your right to enhance your product as best you can and look after your own backyard. You guys have done it, thinking about doing other changes. Sydney's doing it, not just by inventing the Everest, but interfering with what has been a very successful flow from one place to the other that the punting public appreciates, and there's no problem with it. When you go from Sydney, where they can't attract a crowd, and then they handball to Melbourne, which is a massive Australian carnival, starting at Caulfield, ending at Flemington or ending at Sandown, if you want to stretch it that far, they're trying to chip away at something they've got no right to chip away at. They're trying to cling on to a carnival that has far lesser status. as we transition to a very, very successful carnival where the whole country benefits from the massive Melbourne Spring Carnival. They've got their Sydney Autumn. They're trying to chip in on territory that they have got no status or right to chip into because they can't get a crowd. They can't get any interest.
I think everyone agrees with you, aside from the cheer squad, you know, north of the Murray. Look, whether or not the regulations around the patent committee and the and Racing Australia need to be tightened or them giving greater influence in that respect, I think that's probably a valid argument. Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems like Racing New South Wales also has particular influence at Racing Australia level as well. So they're basically able to tick and flick any of these things they want to do.
And what we were going to say is that the patent committee, they're members of race clubs, Jake. And
yes, there are.
They're not independent, are they? Of potential vested interest for their own
jurisdiction. There's probably a strong argument that racing club administrators and breeders should not partake in those activities. And I think just back on the amount of Group 1's conversation, there's no doubt that breeders have had far too much influence over racing administration in this country.
Yeah, and that has a flow-on effect that if you win a Group 1 as a young horse, straight to stud.
Because it has to be internationally compatible because the racing and breeding world has shrunk so much with bloodstock transferals and stuff across all hemispheres and continents and so on. The Northern Hemisphere has to be able to trust the value of our status attributed to our races, or else, there's no comparison between a Group 1 here or somewhere else if ours are trash and theirs are very finely determined. So
maybe we do tighten those, the regulations or the benchmarks, and you may see attrition over time of Group 1 status. But, people are just saying, well, we've got too many, let's sack a bunch of them. I just don't think
But the idea of conjuring up these things that Sydney's conjuring up and then demanding status and demanding this and that, I find that there needs to be roadblocks to that. And I would assume that the Patent Committee is a roadblock. It doesn't seem like they are, though.
It seems like it's a green light. Yeah. Or it's maybe New South Wales-centric. Mm. I saw Nick Williams put out an interesting tweet over the weekend. Imagine if Racing New South Wales, Racing Victoria, Tabcorp could put aside their massive egos for the good of all and put Vic and New South Wales Racing on one premium station again. Well, that would be the dream, but it's not going to happen because it's too fractured. New South Wales, Victoria.
But just imagine the counter-argument. This is, if you extend this little border war to ridiculous levels, which Sydney is starting to take it to, on, say, just for the hell of it, the VRC decided on the day of the Queen Elizabeth Stakes in Sydney to whack on a $5 million race at Flemington. It wouldn't particularly enhance Flemington. It would damage Sydney. I mean, there's no sense of who would actually benefit from that other than it just being a targeted assault. And that's what Sydney's doing to the start of the Melbourne Spring Carnival.
The net result for racing is probably negative.
Exactly, exactly.
Certainly is. A couple of quick ones. We're about to get to Nathan Exley because it's a fascinating harness story up north. But before we get there, just quickly, the Greg Bennett situation. This is a curious one, leaving Aquarius. We know that he went there, only lasted about 6 or 8 weeks,
Read the press statement from Aquarius there, Jake. It's really weird.
Greg Bennett, no rush to make his next move. He's unsure whether he'll return to training. This is by an article by Brad Davidson in the Sunday Telegraph.
It was the last line that was strange.
Unfortunately, Greg's tendered his resignation for personal and family reasons, and we've accepted it. Aquis Deputy CEO Shane McGrath said, "We wish him all the best. He's a great bloke and a great trainer. The most important thing is everybody's safe and healthy."
That's strange.
That seems very strange, and I would guess that that is not reflective of the situation, that it seems their press release seems to be saying, oh, there's Greg's got issues and rah, rah, rah. And I don't know definitely, but I probably think I know enough to think that that's not an accurate reflection of what's going on. Yes. Brian Guy came and went quickly. Greg Bennett, they seem to last a few weeks, get an idea of what's going on, and then for whatever reason, the situation doesn't seem to be tenable. So.
Yeah, I mean, there were, as a recent example, Patnak Farm, that there was a cavalcade of trainers that came
they
and
They bought
went.
The old Patnak property too, which is interesting. So, but the... You know a bit more about the background of the Leung family, billionaire from, and what I understand is going on is they need to establish a certain financial relationship in Queensland of commitment before they can get casino licenses at Cairns and the Gold Coast. So the suggestion might be that the racing operation's prime goal is to service a bigger agenda, as in we need to prove that we can get a certain amount of income through this state before you give us our casino licenses. Than necessarily the best interest of a flourishing racing and breeding operation. So,
well, he's a horseman, Greg Bennett, first and foremost. So something didn't fit right with the partnership.
Well, there's nothing flash about their stallion roster in Queensland either. I mean, if they've got a stack of money and they're all about accumulating the best possible, it's a surprisingly blue-collar stallion roster, I'd say, up there as well in Queensland. So I just think the question is what are the intentions of the operation, you know?
If you're a trainer, you know, could you see yourself stepping into that breach with any
character? Well, you might sort of realise that you're singing from a slightly different song sheet. Who knows, you know?
Just quickly, let's have a chat now to Nathan.
Look forward
Exelby.
To hearing from their lawyers.
RSN does not attribute any of Matt's thoughts. Let's have a chat now to Nathan Exelby from the Courier-Mail, because this was, for mine, the story of the weekend across all sports. So I was flabbergasted when I read Nathan's article that a harness racing driver in Queensland has been given a 3-month suspension for naming a fundraising pig after a Queensland racing official. Nathan Exelby joins us on Racing Files. Good morning, Nathan. What's going on?
Well, it's just par for the course up here. Danielle McMullen, she's a licensed harness racing trainer driver. She chose not to drive on this day. It was a fundraising day for Botra, which is the Breeders, Owners, Trainers, Rangemen Association up here. It was actually a good day. It was the day Aaron Mullen came up here and drove in the race against the racing minister. But as a sidelight to that, they had pig races. And the way that worked, you know, you'd go and buy a pig and the money would go towards the charity. Danielle acquired a pig and chose to name it name very similar to Kwan, who was the deputy chief harness steward here, Kwan Wolsey. And the pig won the race. She then took the ribbon and said, look, here's the ribbon your pig won. And then nothing was said there, but 2 days later she was charged with misconduct, and subsequently she was fined $500 and suspended for 3 months.
Is there a bit more in the background here than meets the eye? It sounds like there has to be some sting in the tail here, so to speak.
Yeah, sure, Matt. Yeah. There is some, like Danielle had a couple of other misconduct charges. You'll see in the steward's report she was actually fined $700 because there was another suspended $200 fine over another misconduct incident. And I do believe she's got some history with the steward. I'm not sure whether it was the steward who wanted to go on with this or when it became apparent in the offices of Keurig that they decided to go on with it. Now, as you're aware up here, our integrity services were overhauled 12 months ago, actually, to form the Queensland Racing Integrity Commission. That came out of an expiring inquiry into greyhound live baiting. So our integrity unit here is completely separate from the control body Racing Queensland now. It's headed up by a former high-ranking police officer in Ross Barnett, and there's now a number of ex-police officers that are on as part of that integrity unit. And,
I'm going to be out of step here and back the stewards on this one. If there's a history of niggling and the position of a chief steward, like the chief of police, like the football umpire, is sacrosanct, if there's a history of niggling, if you want to have a really insulting dig and think you're safe, it is to name a pig after the chief steward or whoever the deputy chief steward. And I think the more you peel back...
Why was it allowed on the day, though? Stop it there or say something.
Because it probably
day.
Just unfolded in real time on the day.
Well, I think we agree with that, but it's more that the penalty just seems pretty so severe for that.
But, Nath, it seems to me that they're, instead of it being an innocent charity day gesture from the trainer, you'd correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like she may have used this opportunity to hammer home hammer something home against the chief steward. Like, here you go, here's your pig, we named it after you. It might just be a very snide gesture that they've interpreted that way as well.
Yeah,
if she's got a bit of
history. I don't think it was as sinister as that in that she feels she went and it was friendly enough on the day. There was nothing said on the day. It's a dig for sure. But as Jake...
Should you be entitled to have that sort of dig at a chief steward and get away with it?
Certainly not according to Keurig.
No, I'm half in their corner here. I know it's a difficult position to explain because it seems like she's been completely slaughtered, but I can see the interpretation. I can see it.
It has to be considered a harsh penalty by any stretch. Now, if you were to do that to a police officer in the street, what sort of penalty would you be looking at? A couple hundred dollar fine?
Yeah.
This is 3 months of her livelihood taken away, which she estimates that'll cost her around $10,000. She does have another job, but she's had to relinquish horses that she trains to other stables.
Is she able to drive, Nathan?
No.
Could it be a look? Our jurisdiction in this state, the policing of racing in this state has been so stuffed up for so long. This is a message from us that there is a big separation between the administrators and the participants. We all know that Queensland Harness Racing's been on the nose for a long time. This might be them saying, hey, no more mucking around with the chief steward, no more little digs with a pig at a charity event. We're in charge. You're the participants. Let's establish that relationship right now. I'm not sure if
Michael's got the story there in front of him. I don't have it in front of me, but the story did include some very strong comments from the commissioner who basically said that along those lines that
Ross Barnett, this action was inappropriate and showed a lack of respect and disregard for common decency in relation to a Keurig staff member. It said Mr. Woosley felt disrespected by this regrettable incident. That's from Ross Barnett, who is the Integrity Commissioner Chief.
And all I'm saying is I can see how that scenario could have unfolded given the climate of Queensland racing, given the lack of respect shown from administrators to participants, that this might be just the line in the sand moment. And she might have been having a cheeky dig that she wasn't entitled to have. So, it might not be as clear-cut as that she's just an innocent victim.
Well, certainly if the intention was to provide a deterrent, they've certainly provided a deterrent from it happening again.
Felgate's poking his tongue at me. He thinks she's been absolutely...
First time I thought Maddie's come down on the authorities' side. there is a first.
It is a Ms. Kwan Wolsey too.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Nath, it's a wonderful world up north. We love talking to you when all these issues arise. Thanks for helping us out.
And we were looking forward to another one of those Group 1s that Matt loves so much up here in Queensland too on Saturday.
That's DR. I think he's already put a line through it.
Just on that, beautiful segue there by Nathan. Our intrepid producer, Gorgeous George, the Flying Dutchman, has just handed me some data from the Patent Committee. Approximately 3.08% of all of our tab races carry black type. That compares favourably with France, 3.4%, Germany, 6.9%, Great Britain, 3%, Ireland, 4.7%, New Zealand, 4.7%, South Africa, 5.1%, and UAE, 10.6%. Europe as a whole is at 3.3%, while Australia, with the second biggest racing and breeding industry in the world, is at 3.08%. We compare favourably.
Yeah, stats, you could make stats say anything.
We've got one
little break to go, and then we're going to wrap things up. We still haven't even got to the turnover breakthrough of $6 million. We'll mention that quickly on the other side.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Well, we've run out of time on The Verdict. So much more that we could have discussed today. Well under Bossy, who won the Group 1 over in Singapore. Zach Purton put on a clinic at Hong Kong over the weekend. $6 billion for the first time Victorian turnover. That's got to be great for the industry as a whole. Hopeful of speaking to Giles Thompson and getting him in the studio in the next few days or next week to discuss that in more depth. And we're on the eve of Royal Ascot. Michelle Payne heading over there. We're hopeful of having Michelle on the show tomorrow to have a chat before she rides Kaspersky, I think it is, in the Queen Anne. Highlight for you coming up, Royal Ascot. How many horses are coming for the Caulfield Cup?
Well, probably the race we're focusing on most is the Group 2 Hardwick Stakes over a mile and a half. But the likely contenders there are Highland Reel and Jack Hobbs, who might just be a level above our handicaps here. Dartmouth won the race last year, and he could be a chance owned by the Queen. But we'll be watching on that race in particular.
Okay. You'll be glued to the coverage, Matty?
No, I'm not going to pretend that I'm globally interested in all big races around the world just for the sake of it. If there was an Australian representation there, I'd be attracted
Michelle,
to it. Michelle, yeah, I'll be watching Michelle, but no, it's not enough for me unless we're represented.
Okay. didn't mention Lockie King either. He didn't win over in France, but what an experience for him to go over there and ride in France. And I saw some great stuff on Twitter with Darren Gauci over there helping him out as well. So it's been a big week for jockeys around Australia. Of course, we spoke to Blake Shin the first half hour, who had his first win in the US. Gents, great to have you back, Jake.
Great to be back, Nugget.
And Maddie.
Thanks, Nugget.
Good to see you've arrived back fighting fit from Cambodia.
A bit leaner too, I think.
I reckon you've trimmed up a bit. Felgate, you might want to cotton onto this. Let's trim up a bit panel.
We're out of time. That was The Verdict. We'll be back tomorrow on Racing Pulse from 8:30. Hopefully, we'll be having a chat to Michelle Payne. Enjoy your day.